Dear Asian Girl, for Asian girls, by Asian girls.
So, hi everyone. On today's episode, we are here with Helen Lee to discuss idolizing politicians. Helen, would you mind introducing yourself?
Hi everyone, my name is Helen. I'm from Richmond, Virginia, and yeah, I'm really excited to be on the podcast today.
Yeah, would you mind explaining Fresh Off the Boat? What is your position there? What is their purpose, etc.?
Yeah, so me and a bunch of other Gen Z millennial young Asian Americans, we started a podcast called Fresh Off the Vote. We launched it August 2020, and our first season was very focused on the 2020 election and informing voters about different sets of issues, elevating different Asian American voices. And yeah, so that was pretty awesome because we didn't really see much of a focus on nuancing Asian American opinions during an election cycle. And yeah, so my favorite part was working with people I had never, we've never met before, but there was a sense of like collaboration and also accountability. Like while we were making the podcast, we were learning about these issues. So we became like more active citizens simply because we were doing the podcast, which I'm sure you guys also experienced too. Just like,
yeah, I can definitely relate to that. I've definitely grown
doing the work and learning more about yourself. Yeah.
Since I joined the podcast, I've learned so much about, different experiences and like really broaden my range of information. And today we're going to be talking about, like I said, politicians being idolized, specifically in, 2020 elections, events, and how these idolizations develop in different ways. And just start off right off the bat. Like, what is your view on idolizing politicians? Like, how have you like noticed it? Like just get us started.
Yeah. So, I think it's important to understand that different people coming from, like, I don't know what year you guys were born. I'm pretty sure you're younger than me by like at least like a little bit. Yeah. But I think that the generation we grow up with, like we're technically the same generation, but like a little bit apart, that the politicians we see in our lives have affected how we view how you should treat a politician. And so for example, like my first impression of a politician or like a president was the Bush era, the George W. Bush era. That's when I was going to elementary school. And so you don't really think much about that. And then comes along Barack Obama, and he has such charisma. And also it was just like broke so many barriers through him becoming president, that there was a sense of idolization, but I wouldn't call it idolization. I'd call it admiration at that point. And also, but later on, of course, I think that we can also retroactively admire and idolize someone too. So when Donald Trump became president, there was idolization of him too by certain people, but there was also nostalgia and idolization of Barack Obama because of this contrast. And so I think we can definitely idolize people simply because they're such heads of state representing countries. And I think that our parents' generation also play a role in how we view politicians. Some parents who are immigrants, they come from countries where there is like charismatic leadership, and that's the only leadership people know. So for example, Russia, like Vladimir Putin is like very much like synonymous with Russia. And so people might idolize him. And other times there's this deep sense of not hatred per se, but parents coming from trauma. And so they look at certain politicians with, it's like the opposite of idolizing. It's like, oh, I don't like them. So you don't even know who these politicians are. You just know one little bit, and then you completely say, I don't like all of them. And so you definitely see that phenomenon a lot nowadays with simply because we have also social media, like Jacinda Ardern from New Zealand. Love her. She's like such a personality. And, like idolizing her is definitely also pretty common simply because we also want more female heads of state. And so that's why I kind of see the dynamics of idolization.
Mm-hmm. So Would you say that idolization is leaves a more positive influence on politics, or do you think overall it kind of creates a negative influence? I mean, like we've seen with the Trump administration and the idolization of Trump from his supporters, we can see like to what extent his followers would support him because of their idolization. But then on the other hand, like you said, there are also like idolization of, I mean, many, many different politicians throughout history. So would you say that this has overall left a positive influence or a negative influence?
So I'm not a very black and white person. I like to show some gray area. Yeah, so I think it's really important to acknowledge that when we often idolize politicians specifically, it's because they're really outstanding, when outstanding being defined very flexibly. So even like Donald Trump, I don't like the man, but the way that he speaks and the way that he says things like without a filter for some people, it's good. Some people consider him reckless. I think that the ways in which we start idolizing politicians is because we don't feel represented. That's one thing. And another thing is our institutions are failing. So you start trying to hold on to something, right? You try to hold on to hope, try to hold on to something that you think will give you hope. And so like Barack Obama is very idolized and admired simply because he did represent, that was literally his slogan, like hope. And Donald Trump was idolized by his supporters because he said anything he wanted to say. And then for a lot of people who had been tired of like filtering themselves, or they were just simply not ready for a diverse America, they latched on to that. So I think that it's not per se positive and negative, but there's a reason why this exists. It's because people don't feel like their voices are being heard, or they feel like this person is like so cool. Like, I mean, I'm not gonna apply the BTS like analogy here, but like you idolizing K-pop stars is because they're so freaking talented, right? Politicians, you idolize them maybe not because they're talented, but because you think they're representing you and your perspectives, and you just don't get that sometimes. And speaking of Asian American politicians, since there aren't that many, that's why I think there was an idolization of certain candidates during 2020, like, or not 2020, the 2020 primaries, and before, simply because Asian Americans were only 6-7% of the population. We crave like being represented somehow, someday. And so you will start to be like, yo, look at them, they're Asian. But then you overlook the fact that their policies are very flawed, or you're idolizing them so much that you're overlooking how they're doing harm to the community. There's a lot of forgiveness involved in idolization.
The mentality is very much, you know, representation for the sake of representation. Once we got the representation, because we've been so deprived of it in the past, we latch onto it, we, you know, undermine any, you know, past mistakes that a politician has made. You know, Kamala Harris is like the most easy example that comes to mind quickly, you know, with her record of being a prosecutor, seemingly progressive prosecutor by her, you know, what she calls it, but we know for a fact that she's incarcerated many Black people, and we choose to ignore that. One, because, you know, anti-Blackness is so prominent in the Asian community, specifically South Asian community. It just adds on to the fact that we are also deprived of like that recognition in terms of, you know, our features and our identity.
Yeah, I think you bring up Kamala Harris. Kamala Harris is very interesting in that I don't think many people knew she was half Indian until she started getting successful. And that's something, another dynamic to notice. I'm gonna sound super academic for a second, but there's this idea of empire. And for those who are a diaspora, countries love to claim things like, you know, you haven't seen yourself, you're so deprived of that. So you start clinging on to things that can be possible. So you even see like when she got like, you know, started becoming VP potential, even like in India, people were like, oh my gosh, it's like our people all of a sudden on stage, rather than like, you know, we're so desperate to hold on to something. And so I think another phenomenon we need to observe is there have been so many mediocre white male candidates in presidential races, right? And we don't per se like have such a like high expectation for them. as much as women of color, specifically these candidates that we just don't get to see every 4 years. And so when they do come on stage, it's this simultaneous dynamic of we need to forgive them. It's like representation. But on the other hand, it's like, why can they not be better? Simply because we want the representation to be so such good quality, because as them being a diaspora member, their failures sometimes we cannot separate from the other people who look like them, so sadly. And so that's one of the hardest parts about, I think, being a minority in politics, is that you don't have much agency sometimes about who can, you're being controlled by a lot of different forces. And yeah, I think that definitely Kamala Harris is, you know, we need to examine her upper caste background, her prosecutorial record, and a lot of different things. But at the same time, we can't think Kamala Harris is like the end all, we've reached the promised land, because if so, we're never going to strive towards more improvement, right? And so her becoming VP also does spark newer conversations about how to better represent people, which is good, because we used to think it was impossible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, I admit, like, I definitely struggle with idolizing politicians sometimes, especially with Kamala Harris, AOC, just seeing women of color being represented in government, I'm like, yes. But then I need to step back and remember that this doesn't mean that their policies are always the best, with Kamala Harris, obviously, with her being a prosecutor. But I think something interesting to bring up is, on the other hand, I feel like Donald Trump has really brought a new wave of idolization, at least for conservatives, because in the past, I haven't really seen that kind of idolization.
Bush didn't have a following. We can all just be honest. He didn't have a following.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah.
And like with people, I mean, I've never seen, this is such a stupid point to make, but I've never seen so much politician merch being repped. Like
merch.
Oh my God.
We need to talk about capitalism. We need to talk about how capitalism plays a role in this entire idolization complex.
That's facts.
So what you bring up about merch is something I also, and you brought up AOC, I forgot she was so idolized. Oh, I forgot about her. I bring her up because you see this new intersection of politics and consumerism, and like YouTube would recommend me videos of, I think I was a Variety or Vogue. It was Vogue, like her lipstick routine. And I loved watching that video so much. Like she, the way she talks about like women in politics and talks about policies while showing you her tutorial, she knows the idolization and platform she has. She can also get information out to you. But you see magazines and fashion designers getting into, like politicians now are like a money-making potential. Why don't we get them to represent our brand? But there's obviously a fine line, because politicians can't take like certain donations. But at the same time, you think about like these corporate donors who have always sponsored like mediocre, again, white politicians. But women, when they take the same amount of money or like doing the same thing, it's like seen as, oh, you're like, you're not professional, which is really much BS, right? But you know, we have to talk about capitalism and how it really thrives off of the idolization. There's so many things going through my mind at the same time. And there's also like the, if you've heard of the court case Citizens United versus Federal Election Commission about how we fundraise for campaigns now, it's not just because politicians like merch. It's because they are broke when they run for office and they can't sustain their campaigns. And so in order for them to be sustainable, they need to think of a way, okay, you like me, you like my policies, you like my name, you buy this hat, this merch, this pin, therefore you will support my campaign to continue my run for the White House. And that's just simply because the ways in which we do politics now are so focused on fundraising and like getting donors. And in order to like move forward, you need the money. You need the money so much. And then that just produces like these cult followings of like Yang Gang 2020 or Trump 2016, 2020. And yeah, it's a pretty bad effect on our environment, sadly, when they throw them away. But yeah, I wanted to bring up like capitalism and the way we run campaigns, like hand in hand.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. And I mean, like both the politician and the company are benefiting from this like mutual agreement, because the politician is gaining even more sensationalism and gaining more following, and the company is making that shmoney, and the politician is making that shmoney. It's just a mutually
shmoney like that.
Money. It's like a never-ending circle of like capitalism that benefits the politician, and the politician is benefiting from capitalism.
Right. Completely. But there's also social media. Like, there's this new, like, imagine, like, okay, fireside chats, FDR, right? Like, back in the day, he had a personality, simply because also the country had needed leadership at the time. For this new era of Barack Obama being so accessible, Michelle Obama, and them releasing a playlist every year, they're just more human. There's a less of a separate, they, we want more human politicians. And so part of that is social media. Like, Trump had like 90, almost 90 million followers on his Twitter before it got shut down. And people who disagreed with him still followed him because it was so mesmerizing to like have a politician just say whatever the, what they wanted to say. There was no filter. And that was refreshing because for so long, people were like, you're so rehearsed, you're so diplomatic, all of that stuff. And then social media is like, oh, I can tweet whatever I want and all the people get to see. There's no like bypassing. That like social media companies love also, like that's how they keep their business running too, is by people wanting to have like a following. But on the other hand, you know, people like AOC, they use Instagram lives to like communicate with constituents. So it's a double-edged sword. You have like this cult following like thing, but at the same time, you're having direct access to constituents. And that bypasses, you know, so many barriers. So many barriers.
And I think it's like interesting to see it with even just like a hashtag, like Yang Gang, how much like publicity and how much like following that gained Andrew Yang just through a social media hashtag. And I think like what you were saying with even the fireside chats or like, with social media now, it's all about like relatability almost. Like these millionaires, we could not even imagine the amount of wealth they have and the amount of power they have. But I think social media really makes them seem more relatable, especially with Trump. I think he really brought like a new era of just using social media to gain idolization almost because of
it. Right. It's, I also want to bring up a point that it's very dangerous for us to write off a lot of things he did as stupid. Because, for example, his, we all remember the Covfefe tweet, or like just like a lot of things he just was not, like spelling was not strong for him. But at the same time, that made him relatable in a weird way. Like making politicians always seem perfect was what a lot of people were tired of. And so we always said like, oh, look at how stupid his tweets are. Like, yes, there's 100% like a negative impact to everything he did. But like, why, if we keep thinking that phenomenon is stupid, we're bound to like repeat history like at some point in time, because there's a reason why certain politicians get idolized. There's a reason why, like, if we had seen this coming, then we probably would have discovered QAnon before it became a big thing. You know, like, there's so much of polarization now that we just pretend we're blind to these phenomena that we don't subscribe to. And then things happen and we don't know why, but it's to anyone who's been observing the other sides, it makes total sense, sadly, why it's been happening.
Yeah, I like how you brought up that we shouldn't simply dismiss it based on its, you know, stupidity and like crazy, like, nature, because like there is a, you know, marketing aspect to it, where I know that in an interview Trump has said like he chose the Republican Party because they're the most easy to manipulate, and that itself shows like how rooted his like marketing is and how like intentional and like how we really shouldn't like just dismiss it on it. And I feel like the Biden administration, like, it's been so good at catering to Gen Z, because we know they know like how powerful we all are, because TikTok, you know, doing that whole round with Trump, we like, you know, got all the seeds taken, so there wouldn't be any supporters there, or like there'd be like a large disparity in the supposed to be number of allies there, you know. And like with the merch and like how quick they would come out and like Gen Z idolizing that, saying like, you know, oh, we stand the merch, you know, because they're, it's just for entertainment purposes, not even like stating any of their policies or like their slogan. It literally was just, you know, a fly swatter and other things we can laugh at, other things we can joke about, because it's been such a tense time for 2020 that we just needed that. And like the Biden administration was just like feeding off of that. And I've seen that, you know, with AOC, you know, being more of a influencer type of person where like, you know, she's going on Instagram,
oh, yeah,
doing Vogue, you know, makeup tutorials, or like playing on Among Us servers, which would have been great if it wasn't overshadowing her political views or her speeches or her other, you know, ideologies as a politician.
And mm-hmm. Yeah, I think too, like this form of these, like, I guess, methods of idolization, like now social media being relatable, like I feel like this like trend has always existed, but it's just been like exemplified through social media. Let me talk. I just want to take a moment to talk about John Ossoff. First of all.
Okay. Yeah.
I do idolize that man. Unfortunately, I'm working on it. He is sexy. That's all I have to say. First of all,
remember Justin Trudeau was on the cover of Vogue too.
Oh my gosh. Justin Trudeau, awful person, but that man's got
Yeah, looks. You're right. That's yeah. It. Like it helps.
It really does.
Pretty, it much, pretty does. Much.
And I feel like he was like playing off of like, oh my gosh, because I start, whoa, I just got like all jumbled.
Mumbled. Calm yourself, girl. It's John Ossoff. You can do it. You can say what you need
what
to
I'm
say.
What I'm trying to say is I've noticed something new with politicians incorporating more like Gen Z, millennial staff on their campaigns. Like I know a big campaign, like I'm not really sure her official role, but she, there was a student from UChicago that was a prominent, played a prominent role in John Ossoff's election. And I think like that's also part of, they're kind of like helping him to create that image of idolizing right. through being like, oh, this is what Gen Z would like. This is what millennials
right.
would like John Ossoff yeah. making TikToks of him like putting on a mask in slow motion. Oh, that is 100%. Like they knew okay what would happen. They knew that I liked
them. That's so interesting. I think so. My TikTok isn't filled with politicians, it's more like sketch comedy right now, but I think the phenomena you describe, like so I'm currently reading A Promised Land by Barack Obama, and he talks about his campaign, his 2008 campaign. Honestly, it's probably around then. It's always been a tradition to get young people to campaign because they will work for no money. It's so they, capitalism, and they will be such, giving such good insights, right? So that's always been there historically. It's just because social media now is like such a huge component that politicians, in order to stay relevant, they need to jump on the trend too. And, you know, it's been so fulfilling to hear, oh, like TikToks is a resume skill now that I can add, you know, like it's super cool that you care about the way we, because if you think about it, an influencer doesn't, well, I have a lot of opinions on influencers, but you can shit on influencers all we want, but they do work their asses off often, like to get to their place that they are. And so knowing that sort of like how to construct a TikTok, there are bad TikToks, there are good TikToks, right? All of that stuff. It requires a certain set of skills. And also the youth vote is like very bad. So I don't care if they use young people to get politicians to look young. Maybe Mitch McConnell needs a makeover. I don't know. And so just getting it out there, it to some degree, it shows that they hopefully, the starting point is they care about these constituents. Starting point. I don't think, well, we'll have to see if they abandon these constituents once they get into office, because the thing about getting yourself elected is often through young immobilization. The thing about sustaining yourself in office is often high corporate, you know, there's this weird dynamic of once people go to Washington, they do, you have to learn how to play by the rules. And sometimes people feel betrayed when the idolized politicians actually get into office, you know?
Definitely.
And so it's, we'll have to see how that goes with John Ossoff, because technically him and Warnock have to run again soon, because they all did like these, the seats they inherited are, you know, they're up again soon at some point. So. Yeah.
And I think we see that especially with progressive candidates, with them like advocating to the youth, and then the youth thinking that they're going to follow these like progressive agendas that they say they are going to, and then once they're in office, kind of abandoning that, or again, like following the rules because they're being supported by large corporations, large oil corporations. And something that I like that you brought up is kind of talking about influencers and what role they play in this whole thing, because
Cardi B, man.
Oh my gosh. Have you noticed that this past election, every influencer had something to say? Like,
yeah. Oh my God. I have many opinions. Naina, you want to go first? Cause you,
I just was like acknowledging like how celebrities were so vocal about it. I wasn't expecting it, but Helen, you go, since you seem like passionate about this specific point.
Okay. I didn't want to cut you off, Melissa. Did you have something else to say about the influencers in election?
You're good.
Okay. So there's two things, right? There's like the fact that that election felt like life and death for so many people. And so it's not that like getting celebrities and influencers is bad. It's simply because they have farther reach than your little campaign office in Iowa can do. So getting celebrities to endorse, it seems so stupid because why should we care? But at the same time, they have like 15 million on their Instagram. So why not use that as a mechanism, right? And oftentimes people are like, oh no, I follow an artist and I follow the sports league, you know, person because they aren't involved in politics. Well, that's just not like the fact that LeBron James, like, you can't, your body is inherently political. You like can't not be political, right? And so the ways in which like people are now acknowledging that politics permeates everything we do is like kind of the starting point of a lot of like celebrities getting involved. So you see things like Cardi B interviewing Bernie Sanders. Also Bernie just like knows how to bop with influencers in interviews. And then recently Cardi B released like Cardi Tries, and she goes into a preschool classroom and like starts quiz people on presidents. I don't know if you've seen that. And she's trying to, I think she does play a positive role because she is asking questions. And even though people will like stop following her simply because she was vocal about politics, I think that it's her choice, right? Like I see her as someone who doesn't just jump on the bandwagon. She knows her influence. On the other hand, I'm not saying all influencers are like that. I think there are influencers who they won't say anything because it will hurt their brand. They know that impact. And there's another thing is which influencers will jump on the wagon because they're falling stars and they need a little boost, because we can't doubt that social justice clout is a thing. Like becoming knowledgeable about it, doing a hashtag here and there, you're gonna get a lot of boosts and likes, even though you're probably hypocritical at some point. And so people know the power of a movement, and there are people who know the role they can play, but also people know how they can benefit from the same thing. And sometimes they may not even recognize that. But I think it's definitely demonstrated like the power of social media and social justice clout by when people choose not to post because they're scared of the impact that it could have. Melissa, what were you gonna say? You got really excited when I said social justice clout.
Oh yeah, I wanted to talk a little bit about that because I've definitely seen that, especially this year, because they know that the supporters of Joe Biden, which is the majority of like Gen Z and millennial youth, once they see that their celebrity supports like Joe Biden, they're even more inclined to idolize that politician.
That influencer. Yeah.
Yeah, and that influencer. Like one example is Tana Mojo. I don't know if you guys heard this, but Tana Mojo did this thing called like, I don't even know, like butts for Biden or something, booty for Biden, where she would literally like send out a free nude picture.
Oh, I think I've heard about this.
Yeah. Like where she would send a free nude picture if they proved that they were voting for Biden. I was like, that just kind of like blew
my mind. That feels a little bribery-ish, but like, yeah, I don't know.
There's like some discussion about it being illegal. But yeah, I think that like kind of shows that I'm sure she like supported Biden, obviously. But I think mostly she was just doing it for that like clout.
Yeah. It's just so sensationalist, even the way she's like trying to gain those votes. Like it's not spreading information about the politician. It's just like idolizing the idea of him being president. And like I feel like it's like we've been saying, like, you know, and like echoing the whole time, but it's like the election was a whole win all lose all situation. Like the celebrities like really played into that, like, you know, just heightened the stress, like, you know, the amount of coverage for, you know, getting Biden to be like, you know, the one in office. And like I feel like now that he's in office, people are going to let up on that. It's going to be again like the whole BLM, like, you know, black square trend on Instagram where,
oh god,
exactly, like, yeah. Everyone was, you know, overpowering, like, you know, reposting all these posts and everything, but then once it started to like, you know, die down a bit, people forgot about it and became a trend. And, you know, they're like the real, not the real politicians, the real like advocates who are still continuing to bring up, you know, anti-blackness or, you know, police brutality. But now that's, you know, not being a trend on Instagram, it's like not getting the horsepower that it needs and the attention it needs. And I feel like it's going to be really similar with the election, like, you know, holding Biden accountable, because once again, idolizing politicians is so like current in our society where once, you know, the job is done, he's in office, we're not gonna look at his actions
or
criticize him when needed.
But at the same time, we have to think about Gen Z being an enabler of this phenomenon entirely. Like, there's like during last summer when the Black Square incident happened, thankfully my friends reached out to me telling me like, oh, like this is drowning out voices with the hashtag of when actually people use Black Lives Matter to give like useful information about organizing. But there were celebrities when they didn't post a Black Square, they were getting canceled. And I think that there's celebrities like Gen Z wanting celebrities to, you know, use their platform. But think about it, like most of their platform is of Gen Z. So it's like a feedback loop. You're not actually getting to anyone new as much. And when they don't post, it's like they don't care. And
canceling that for that reason is very, you know, performance activism. And like, we don't acknowledge that. It feels so forced. And if it is coming from an authentic place, like we're just, you know, trying to perpetuate like the wrong sort of activism. But keep going with what you're saying.
Yeah, no, I just saw so many people being like, oh, the so-and-so didn't post yet. They're definitely like, and they start speculating, like, I don't know if Gen Z just has a lot of time to speculate people's personal lives or like their political endeavors. And so it's just like, oh, they didn't post, so therefore they believe this. I think to some extent that's true. Like when you're silent, you are being complicit. But if an IG post is our measurement for wokeness, then that is, we got to do better. we really got to do better than that. Yeah, but going back to like kind of Melissa said earlier, like the commercialization of all this, that we idolize progressive celebrities because we think they're vocal. It's like, oh, they're very vocal about climate change. Great. Or they're very, you know, they're very like, I love so-and-so because they're so vocal, right? I'm sure that feedback loop exists there. And it's just very hard to parse all of that out, the good and the bad.
Yeah. This is unrelated to
current
discussion, but something else I wanted to bring up is, when you mentioned Bernie Sanders a while ago, sorry, this is taking a whole different.
No worries.
But I just want to talk about how memes play into the idolization.
Oh.
It is, oh my gosh, like Bernie Sanders, the meme, like that is plays such a big role into this, like, because I mean, we are like humans with short attention spans. Like we just see a meme and we're like, wow, like, what a great person. He's wearing mittens. Not saying Bernie Sanders shouldn't be idolized, because I feel like he is one of the politicians that actually stays true to his policies. But I mean, like, it does play into that role of idolization. Even with Trump, like a meme of Trump oh my gosh, the video of Trump dancing. I don't know if you guys have seen that, but like, I'm like, I'm like,
celebrate good times. Yeah, YMCA.
Yeah, but I mean, it's just funny to see how like pop culture and like social media culture really plays into like affecting politics, actually making legitimate effects on politics, like with voting turnout. I just think that's insane.
Yeah, I mean, but at the same time, like, you know how Bernie Sanders like showed up to inauguration wearing his like normal Costco coat or something, and like the mittens, like that's just people said that he would do that if he became president too. I would also agree, like he'd probably show up in that outfit too. He just doesn't care as much. But the when the mittens went viral and his attitude just sitting there like waiting on a whole inauguration day is like we idolize things that we think it's like subtly reflect us. Like who wants to sit through, like, even if it's Lady Gaga and J-Lo, like it can be a long day. And so for him to like kind of, you know, we don't know what he was thinking. He just sits like that, right? But the more important thing is like the impact of that action. Like, so the mittens were made by a small company in Vermont in fully recycled materials, and the small businesses are struggling right now. So by him wearing the mittens, like the woman got like, I don't know, hundreds of thousands of new orders for mittens. Who wears mittens? Because, you know, you can't do anything when you have mittens on like this, right? So there is like a positive impact sometimes of this capitalist like feedback cycle, right? Like, oh, you see your favorite politicians wearing something. That's why Michelle Obama, I know she's like technically not a politician, but we have to talk about her impact of when she stepped onto the stage as first lady. She knew everything she wore had diplomacy, like diplomatic and like small business effects. She always chose certain designers who were minorities, immigrants, because she knew that when someone saw her wear something, the idolization would result in money trickling down to a small business, or to, you know, maybe not a small business, but to those who need to be uplifted. And I think that's, you know, that is very smart in knowing the impact that you can have. I don't see many male politicians doing that, but female politicians have started noticing, like Cori Bush is a thrifter. And so her going to thrift shop, right, is partially because it's the salary of a congresswoman is actually quite low considering like how much work they do. But also women are expected to like, what is business casual, right? You always are expected to be on. And so that takes a financial toll. And she brings that to like showing, I think it was a Teen Vogue where she did a cover like showcasing her going thrift shopping. Like she's shedding light on things that men don't have to think about. And so in that case, I'm fine with like people idolizing her because she's bringing up issues that the old generation of politicians have never told you about because it's just not proper to do so.
I didn't know that about Michelle Obama. That's actually so cool. I didn't know
she Yeah.
was so interesting.
You should look into, oh my God, I know her, like almost every single one of her looks has like a political statement. I mean, Melania Trump also did that too. First ladies 100% nowadays know that their fashion choices will have a ripple effect in like whether it's like, oh, like the dress was designed by like, you know, a veterans organization, or you know, wearing a pin or something like that. Like even now wearing a mask in Congress, like it's become like, even like what's her face, like Marjorie Greene, like that woman, she like knows wearing stuff, you know. Everyone's using it. Everyone knows the power of slapping a label on some clothing and putting it on yourself now.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Like, especially with women, like being so, you know, like I analyze in terms of like fashion and everything, which is so hypocritical because we all know that men are going to be asked, oh, who are you wearing? Or like, oh, like who is your designer behind your shoes or whatnot? And just, I think it's good that some people will try to tap into that and like, you know, utilize what would be hypocritical and like, you know, like taking away energy from what they're actually working on to like better, you know, whatever small businesses they could support. And yeah, we've covered like a lot today, but I think we're at the point where we can just to, you know, go back to our original topic of idolizing politicians. Just, I guess, like, how do we like refrain from that? Like, you know, go about it in a way that isn't harmful, because there are definitely a lot of harmful consequences, you know, like it can go to the extreme, like, you know, how the Trump administration, his followers, incited the riots at the Capitol. You know, we've seen the extremes. So just, we know that's really different from like how we can idolize people who are so likable, you know, like Michelle Obama, like we've mentioned just now, he wasn't a politician, but you know, in that arena, you know, Barack Obama, who is a like light of hope, you know, he's so likable and we're so desperate to idolize those people. So just how do you think we should go about that? How do we manage that in a way that's, you know, ethical and best for politics?
I'd love to hear your guys' opinions after I say what I'm going to say. I want to bring it back to, so it's a hard topic to cover. So I'll pick a specific instance that I want to talk about, which is Andrew Yang. So, cause you guys are Dear Asian Girl, you know, like we're doing Asian American advocacy work, right? There is an idolization often when we don't see ourselves in politics, and Andrew Yang, knowing the platform he had, of being visibly East Asian and running for president and being on that debate stage and everything, it matters, right? Seeing people who look similar to you, who have backgrounds, you know, who are children of immigrants, that does matter. However, we need to, and I tell this to everyone, we need to draw the line between idolizing and supporting those in the community.
Exactly. What I was
because
saying.
If we...
right as you said that, I had those words in my head.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, sure. You wanna talk about the story?
I feel like with idolization, it's very much like pop culture. It's very much, you know, like it just gives you like so much influencer vibes. Like I remember, this is a bit like, you know, off topic, but I remember seeing like AOC and Kamala Harris on the cover of Vogue, and I don't know why, but maybe I'm just, you know, out of the loop, but that just felt a bit like off-putting to me, seeing like a politician on like a magazine that's, you know, dedicated towards, you know, fashion or like, you know, makeup and that whole industry, like the beauty industry versus like politics and awareness. I don't know, that's just like a small comment, but idolization mm-hmm. is different from support, where supporting allows you and gives you room to, you know, see any potential flaws and like, you know, have like
yes
something about it. But idolization is very much, you know, 100% support. It's very black and white, very extreme, which I think is
intuitive
because is in general, like Melissa said, our attention span is so short, where when we come to a point, we stick to that point. We try to prove that point by saying like, oh, you know, they did X, Y, and Z, therefore they aren't as bad, you know, maybe like A is like a reason why we really shouldn't support them, but you know, we're gonna stick to our original opinion. And that's where, you know, I think supporting versus idolization is like the better option, but continue, please.
Yeah, so I bring up Andrew Yang because when you're first, you're lonely and you do things and suddenly you reflect on the entire community or the community comes after you, etc. So for him, obviously his signature was UBI, Universal Basic Income, and Yang Gang supporters were also probably like former Trump train supporters who then like jumped onto him. And he really resonated with a lot of people who felt like left behind by technology. So props to him and everything. Like Venture for America is also something he's done, bringing jobs to like low resource like cities, bringing young talent there. But I will say that one thing is he played to stereotypes, and on his platform of playing to stereotypes, like I'm Asian, I'm good at math, or I bring up his Washington Post article every chance I get. Because, yeah, Andrew Yang, if you ever see this, I bring up the Washington Post article because during COVID, we saw a rise in xenophobia and hate crimes against people who looked East and Southeast Asian because people thought they had COVID, which is stupid. And he wrote this op-ed that was like, we as Asian Americans need to be even more vigilant in patriotism and showing our country like that we can contribute, we need to go vote and do this, all of this. And I was like, why is my safety conditional upon, you know, like why? He just perpetuated this idea that Asian Americans are forever foreign, that they need to work twice as hard to be belonging, you know, to find belonging in the country, to be respected as human beings. And that was such a huge turnoff to me, was that patriotism for him was like, it just reminded me of like World War II and how Japanese Americans needed to prove their loyalty by signing up to be in the army or renouncing their Japanese identity. And there's a lot of nuances there. And, you know, for him to have such a platform that's when I realized we cannot idolize someone who's Asian American running for office simply because they're Asian American. Because if so, we're going to hurt ourselves by continuously blindly following someone, right? On the other hand, though, I think that he definitely has like a unique position, and that because he's like one of many firsts, right? That we want him to be so perfect. Like, that's part of idolization, is we want hope, but also we strive for perfection because we want something so bad, right? But like you said, there's like supporting someone and idolizing someone. And in this case, because we have more Asian Americans getting, you know, into office or running for office, and also he's making his run for mayor right now, there's more time now rather than to idolize him, but to actually be like, do I support his policies? Is he actually representing the community? Is he using his platform to nuance perspectives, to push for, you know, very systemic change? Then we will not be falling into the trap of, you know, just blindly following someone simply because they look like us.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's so dangerous, I think.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's like the message, like, we want everyone to hear, is to always continuously develop your perspective. Don't just settle on idolizing a politician, blindly supporting a politician. Actually read into their policies, and don't be afraid to change your mind about a politician, or just in general. Like,
yeah, you're not dating them. This is like not a long-term committed relationship that so many people are like, I can't leave them because, you know, what I mean, okay, sometimes there's no other options, but like, you can't just, you know, you're not in that committed relationship. Rather, you need to think like, okay, I'm going to say two contracts. There's like a marriage contract people think about, like how a relationship works. Then there's like contract, society contract, that the government is supposed to work for you. Like, that's the contract, right? And so you need to constantly be revisiting that contract of, is this politician serving me? Or am I just blindly following them because, you know, I'm afraid to leave that relationship? Because that's how we keep certain people in office that just need to leave at this point.
I completely agree. Well, thank you so much for coming onto our podcast. And it was really, really great talking about this subject with you. I think you brought up a lot of points that Nina and I did not even think about at all.
Yeah, no, it was really interesting perspective. Yeah. I really like how you talk about Andrew Yang. Like, I like was especially like, I've been a victim of like, not a victim, I've been guilty of, you know, idolizing, you know, just because he's East Asian, like thinking, oh, he has like, you know, the face that we want in office, but like, he obviously has his flaws in the article, and I'm really glad you brought it up.
Yeah, if you need any further, like, I think Andrew Yang's just one example, but we can look at Nikki Haley, to look at Bobby Jindal. We look at a lot of other people that it's a pretty common phenomenon to see that. And so highly recommend. I do want to do a quick plug before you guys close.
Yeah, of course.
Go ahead. So our Fresh Off the Vote team, our podcast team, we're going through kind of revamping for our season two. And so we're looking for new people, content contributors, and development strategists for our team. And so if you are at all interested in joining a really kick-ass team of young people who want to continue to explore these social issues, to nuance them, to kind of refresh our understanding of politics and culture and everything, please feel free to reach out. And yeah, also support young people's work by like also financially contributing. I hate to say that, but buy us a coffee. Buy us a coffee if you have time. Yeah, so check out our website, freshoffthevote.com. for the open positions, and really excited to see also where Dear Asian Girl goes.
Want more of Dear Asian Girl? You can find us everywhere on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Anchor. We're on everything. Can't get enough? Subscribe, follow, rate, review to get all the updates on the latest at DAG. Let us know your feedback and what we can do to improve. We also can be found on Instagram. Follow us at Dear Asian Girl to receive updates about our latest episodes and fun facts about the host. We'd love for you to reach out.
DAG, Dear Asian Girl, a podcast dedicated to share the stories of Asian girls everywhere. For the Asian Girl, by the Asian Girl.